The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
This is from Master Dogen's 300 Koan Shobogen Zo. Dongshan's teaching of the ascension, the main case. Dongshan studied with Yunyan. One day he asked Yunyan, "Who can hear the teachings of the ascension?" Yunyan said, "It can be heard by the ascension." Dongshan said, "Do you hear it, Master?" Yunyan said, "If I heard it, then you wouldn't hear my teaching." Dongshan said, "Well, that being the case, then I don't hear your teaching." Yunyan said, "You don't even hear my teaching. How could you hear the teachings of the ascension?" And at this, Dongshan was enlightened and responded in verse, "Wondrous, marvelous, the teachings of the ascension are inconceivable. If you listen with the ears, you won't understand. When you hear with the eyes, then you'll know." Daroshi's commentary. The 10,000 things are neither sentient nor insentient. The self is neither sentient nor insentient. Therefore, the teaching of the ascension cannot be perceived by the senses. This teaching is heard before there is a body and after mind is forgotten. It was heard before our parents were born and before the Buddha appeared. It is not a matter of ordinary consciousness. How then can it be heard? When body and mind have fallen away, in the stillness that follows, the teaching is intimately manifested in great profusion. Whether we're aware of it or not, this is always taking place. The verse. The teaching of the ascension, if you try to grasp it, you'll miss it. It has no form. If you try to let it go, you cannot separate from it. It is not formless. Subtle and wondrously inconceivable, the muse constantly reveals the mysterious teachings of the 10,000 things. I think this is one of the more extraordinary teachings in the Zen tradition. You know, Master Dogen in the Mountains and Rivers Sutra said the mountains and rivers of the present are the actualization of the word of ancient Buddhas. The Mountains and Rivers Sutra. So he presented that as the Mountains and Rivers as a sutra. A sutra being the teachings of the Buddha. And so here, this teaching of the ascension. So from the very beginning with the Buddha's teaching, the Buddha said that liberation comes when we realize the nature of self. Because this is where we create suffering. This is where we struggle. This is where we're perceiving the world. This is where our attachments is taking place. This is where we free ourselves of all of that. And so all of the practices that are turning towards understanding the nature of mind and the nature of the self. But what about the world? Bridges, cars, mountains, rivers, trees, people, other people, things, situations. Even if the entanglement ultimately and always is taking place within ourselves, the world has something to do with it, right? As we're coming into contact with the world and objects, we're getting entangled. And so what is the nature of things, particularly in Mahayana Buddhism, is also very important. Because if we realize that the self is empty, but everything else has intrinsic qualities and characteristics and existence, then we're not yet liberated, because we're still going to empower falsely objects to be able to give us pleasure or whatever it is we're looking for, because those things exist in those objects. And so then there's training and teachings and koans to directly turn our attention to and study the nature of the 10,000 things, which basically means everything in the universe. So this koan is drawn from, and remember that this collection of koans, it said Dogen brought back these 300 koans from China when he went to study with Xu Qing. And he had them with him when he came back, and then he used many of them in his teachings of the Shobo Genzo. You know, he drew from them. And he had also, you know, studied originally in the Rinzai school, so he was no doubt already familiar with many of these koans. And so many years ago, Dada Roshi took that collection of koans and began giving talks on every single one. This is the results of one of those talks, writing a commentary, writing a verse in the tradition of the koan literature, which was a long project, 300 koans. It went on for years. He did it together with Kazuaki Tanahashi, who helped him with the translations, and they did a lot of work together to try and work on the language. And then it was finally finished and published, and I think it was one of the great contributions of our era, certainly to the koan body of religious teachings and literature. And he really liked this koan, in no small part because of his love for the mountains and rivers and the earth and his long history of being in the mountains and rivers and the way he brought that into our training and teachings. And this koan is part of a fuller dialogue, a longer dialogue with Dongshan, who heard of a particular teaching and brought it to the attention of Kuishan, who is another master at that time. And the master says, well, what is the teaching that you have questions about? And Dongshan said, a student once asked, what sort of thing is the mind of ancient Buddhas? And who was asking the national teacher. The national teacher said, it's wall and tile rubble. And the student says, wall and tile rubble. Isn't that something insentient? And the national teacher said, yes, it is. And the student says, and yet it can expound the Dharma. And the national teacher says, it's constantly expounding it, radiantly expounding it without ceasing. And the student says, well, then why haven't I heard it? And the national teacher says, you yourself haven't heard it, but this doesn't hinder those who can hear it. The student says, well, what sort of person acquires such hearing? And the national teacher said, all the enlightened beings have acquired such hearing. The student says, can you hear it, Master? And the national teacher says, no, I can't. And the student says, well, if you haven't heard it, then how do you know that insentient beings expound the Dharma? And the national teacher said, fortunately for you, I haven't heard it, for if I had, I would be the same as the enlightened beings, and you therefore would not hear the Dharma that I teach. And the student says, well, in that case, then ordinary people have no part in this. And the national teacher said, I only teach for ordinary people. The student says, well, what happens after ordinary people hear this? And the national teacher says, then they're no longer ordinary people. And then the student went on to ask, you know, what is the source of this? Where does it come from? Is there anyone? I still don't understand it. Can you explain it further? And the national teacher says, why don't you go to this teacher, Master Yunyan, and ask him the question? And so he did. He went to Yunyan. Dongshan went to Yunyan. And of course, this is Dongshan in our lineage. And asked the question, what is the mind of ancient Buddhas? What sort of person can hear the teachings, the Dharma expounded by insentient beings? And Yunyan said, non-sentient beings can hear the teachings of non-sentient beings. And he asked, can you hear it? And Yunyan said, if I could hear it, then you wouldn't hear my teaching. And Dongshan says, why can't I hear it? And Yunyan raised his kutz and says, can you hear this? Dongshan said, no, I can't. And Yunyan says, well, you can't even hear when I'm expounding the Dharma. How do you expect to hear it when a non-sentient being expounds it? And Dongshan said, in what sutra is this taught that insentient beings can expound the Dharma? And Yunyan said, haven't you read the Amitabha Sutra? There it says that water birds and tree groves, all without exception, recite the Buddha's name, recite the Dharma. And on this, Dongshan came to enlightenment and recited that poem. And so this koan is just drawing out that very final part of this whole journey that Dongshan was on. What is the teachings of the insentient? What is the mind of ancient Buddhas? Why are we liberated when we realize the nature of mind? So this is not, the mind of ancient Buddhas is not asking a question about our head or our brain, our thoughts or ideas, but about the nature of mind. And mind is not simply awareness or consciousness or mindfulness or attention. To see the nature of mind is to see the nature of all things. And this mind is not you, but it's not apart from you. It's not your history or personality, but it's never distant from that. To be liberated from mind is to be liberated from the self, from things, ideas, past, present, and future. And so when the national teacher says it's wall and tile rubble, this is not what the student was expecting. Tadaroshi says, yes, it's fences and walls, pebbles, it's a Brooklyn Bridge. Insentient means without life, inanimate, not of the human world, not of the living world, something that has no feelings or senses or consciousness. And yet it can expound the Dharma, these masters are saying. In fact, it's constantly expounding, radiantly expounding it. And so this retreat this weekend, this theme of this Ango, right, relationship, every person is a Buddha, every encounter is Dharma, every being is Sangha. When someone speaks, we listen. When someone acts, we notice. They communicate. People, we communicate to each other through our thoughts, our words, our ideas and actions. But how else do we communicate? Through our body, through our emotions, facial expressions, gestures. There's this. There's this. There's this. How else do we communicate? Energy, moods, intentions. We can communicate by what we do. We can communicate by what we don't do. We look for certain forms and expressions that we relate to. And if we don't see them in a living thing, for instance, then we conclude they're not communicating. They don't have any language. They're not expressing anything. Because it's not in our language. In the same way that when people speak in a language we don't understand, we can think, well, they're not very smart. Is anything not communicating? Is there anything that is not expressing, animate or inanimate? When we behold a tree, a river, a bridge, a sky, and experience something, feel something, is that communication? Does communication always need to make sense? Does it need to be something we understand? Does it need to have a purpose? Does that which is communicating need to be trying to express something? Does it have to get our attention? The insentient is constantly expounding the Dharma. How is it that we can go through a whole day, a year, a lifetime, and not think about the insentient, not think about the earth, not think about our world? When that which we're not thinking about, we are utterly dependent upon in every blessed second of our lives. But we can have no concern, no regard. In fact, we can disregard, we can be destroying it. Is that because we are not hearing its teachings? Or is that because we're not receiving its ongoing, ceaseless, radiant communication? Expounding the Dharma, Dharma, you know, refers both to the teachings of the Buddha, who is an enlightened being, and by virtue of that, the Dharma of any enlightened being. But the Dharma also refers to the 10,000 things, to wall and tile rubbles, to the Brooklyn Bridge, to rivers and trees and sky and clouds, to cars, buildings. Why? Because each thing abides in its own Dharma state. Each thing is in and of itself. Prajnaparamita is non-dual, is neither existent nor non-existent, is neither right nor wrong, is not coming or going. But what is the ascension teaching? What is it that we're not hearing? What is it that we're missing? Abiding in its own Dharma state is what we call suchness. The reality of this, the reality of this object, this Dharma state, this piece of tile, this person, this stick. Dogen says, actualizing Buddha ancestors is reality thoroughly experienced. When we experience reality thoroughly, we have actualized Buddha ancestors. We have invoked Buddha ancestors. They have become alive. They are present in that moment. We have become Buddha ancestors. He says, reality is all things. All things are reality. There's nothing that is not reality. And this reality is what we call thusness. Original nature, thusness. Body, thusness. Mind, thusness. World, thusness. Cloud and rain, thusness. Walking, standing, sitting, and lying down, thusness. Sadness, joy, motion, stillness, thusness. Staff and whisk, thusness. Taking up the flower and smiling, thusness. Inheriting the Dharma and giving predictions, thusness. Studying and endeavoring of the way, thusness. Who can hear the teachings of the insentient? Yunyan says it can be heard by the insentient. Only a Buddha can realize Buddha. Only a Buddha can hear the teachings of a Buddha. Only a flower can receive the teachings of a flower. Only an insentient can hear the teachings of the insentient. What sort of person acquires this kind of hearing? National teacher said all the sages, every enlightened being has acquired such hearing. But in order to acquire such hearing, one has to have the capacity to do that. And the Buddha realized we all have that capacity. We give that the name Buddha nature. When an ordinary person acquires such hearing, they become a wise one. When a wise person acquires that hearing, they become an ordinary person. When a student of the way hears the teachings of the insentient, they become an insentient being. They enter into the realm of insentient beings. When an insentient being enters the realm of the Buddha, they become a student of the way. This is really just another way of saying to study the way is to study the self. To study oneself is to forget the self. To forget oneself is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things. Wall, tile, rubble. And to be enlightened by the 10,000 dharmas is to be freed from one's body and mind and those of others. In that moment, every being is freed within their suchness. In other words, we don't just realize the liberation of ourselves, we realize the liberation of everything, and not just people, but everything, that everything is fundamentally free, peaceful, complete. That's why it said that at the moment of the Buddha's enlightenment, he said, I and all beings, all things, together attain the way at the same moment. And what Dogen is saying is in order to encounter, to acquire this hearing, to encounter this enlightened teaching of the insentient, we have to forget the self. We have to free our body and mind and the mind of others. They happen at the same moment. And so to study the Dharma, to study with a teacher, to practice Zazen, ultimately is all coming down to this. We might say, acquire our true capacity for hearing and seeing, feeling, tasting, touching, smelling, that is free of body and mind. And so we talked yesterday during the retreat a lot about the kleshas and the different factors of mind coming from the Abhidharma teachings that we get bound up in. Greed, anger, and delusion, pride, and jealousy, all these different facets of our entanglement. And then all of these other aspects of our mind and being that can liberate us, help liberate us from those entanglements. And that it, through all of our practice, whenever we're practicing in any single moment, no matter what the form it takes, that's what we're doing. And I mentioned that when we're actually practicing, even if we're still in a deluded state, there's still very much self and other. We're in the presence of and feeling the force of our entanglements or our karma. That because we're practicing, we're in a sense turning towards or coming into alignment, coming closer to our Dharma state, which we're never apart from. And so it's just a clumsy way of saying it. Because how can we come closer to something we're never apart from? But there's the sense of something. And there are moments where we sense that. We sense that there's something that is in some way in the affirmative. You know, I remember in my early years when I was practicing on my own and there was nobody to talk to, nobody to ask. I had two books to refer to. And it was, you know, I was just a beginning student. It was difficult. I wasn't, you know, Zazen was hard and my mind was scattered and all the rest. But even in those difficulties and all the way through, I just had this sense that there was something that was true about this. And if you had asked me, what do you mean by that? I wouldn't have known what to say. I don't think I would have had words for that. I couldn't have explained it. It didn't even make sense to me. It was just a sense of something. And fortunately, I trusted it. Is that our basic wisdom? Is that suchness? Is that coming closer? Is that a teaching? In a sense, it's being received. That is being heard, not necessarily with my ears, not with my thinking not mind. It's not making sense, but something's being communicated. The teaching of the ascension cannot be perceived by the senses. The teaching is heard before there is a body and after mind, before there is a body and after mind is forgotten, which is a very beautiful way of just saying when we are not injecting ourselves, creating a sense of I, me, mine, as the Buddha taught. It has to be heard before our parents were born and before the Buddha appeared. When Dongshan asked the national teacher to explain it, Dongshan said, I still don't understand what you're saying. Can you say more? And so when he was studying with Kweishan raised his whisk and says, do you understand this? And Dongshan said, no, I don't. Please explain. And Kweishan says, it can't be explained to you by means of the mouth of one born from a mother and father. No matter how an enlightened being is, they cannot explain it with their mouth. It cannot be communicated that way. It is being communicated, but it has to be communicated in another way. It has to be experienced or received in another way. That's why we practice. That's why we sit. Not just to let go of thoughts, but in that, as the mind calms, is that clear, bright awareness we talked about yesterday that we're always cultivating, that we become attuned, attentive. We learn, in a sense, how to receive, how to experience, which we can't do if our mind is cluttered. If our mind is preoccupied, it's preoccupied. Right? It's like those teachings are trying to get in, and there's a sign that says, no room at the inn. Can't get in. Right? Come back later or never. Right? Not interested. We have to create some space. And so he says it's not a matter of ordinary consciousness. We can't just decide I'm going to listen and hear something. We can't try to have a special experience. It's not about that. How then can it be heard, Dada Roshi asks. He says, when body and mind fall away, in that stillness, the teaching is intimately manifested in great profusion. Whether we're aware of it or not, this is always taking place. And it's not that it's suddenly intimately it's not that it's manifested in great profusion for the first time, but now it's intimately manifested. In other words, it is in our mind. We have made contact intimately. And so that's why we have to let go. We don't close any of our senses in sitting. The eyes are open, ears, nose, skin, all of it's there functioning. And so the world comes in, right, like always. But what are we practicing doing? Let it come in, right? The world is not the problem. We do not need to keep the world out and put a sentry there to not allow anything in. That it can never lead to liberation. Right? And so we leave all the doors open, but we develop the natural capacity that when something comes in, it just passes through. Don't bind it. Don't trap it. Don't put it in a cage. Let it pass through as it naturally will. And so we let go of sitting in our eyes and ears for looking for something, thinking for something. Let all of it, all of those senses, let our whole mind return to its original state. In the art practice that Hojin Sensei gave us for Ango practice, she began with a quote by Master Dogen from Mfasgo Mitsugo, intimate language. Dogen says, since intimacy surrounds you, and this intimacy is letting body and mind, letting entanglements, attachments, trying to understand and figure everything out, letting that just drop away. Intimacy. Since intimacy surrounds you, it is fully intimate. It is beyond intimate. We should clearly study this. And so the person becomes the correct heir of Buddha ancestors in this way. Right now is the very moment when you are intimate with yourself and intimate with others. Dada Roshi says, whether we are aware of it or not, this is always taking place. Right now is the moment when we are intimate with ourselves and intimate with others. You are intimate with Buddha ancestors, intimate with other beings. In this way, intimacy renews intimacy. It's self-fulfilling. It's self-generating. It never runs out. And so Dongshan said, wondrous, marvelous, these teachings of the ascension are inconceivable. They can't be conveyed through the mouth we were given at birth. If you listen with your ears, you won't understand it. When you hear with the eyes, then you'll know. And for so many years, I thought, what is he talking about? You know, do I like take my ears and put them on my eyes? It's like... when the whole body is an ear, when the whole body is an eye, when we're hearing all over, all throughout, when we're seeing all throughout, all over, then how is it? To study the Dharma, to sit before a teacher, to receive instruction, direct pointing, it's all so that we encounter today. Right now is the very moment when we are intimate with ourselves and each other. And that is not dependent upon views, personalities, politics, economics. It functions within all of that, but it is free of all of that. But as this student naturally asked, if it's ceaselessly expounding it, why can't I hear it? Why are we all hearing it? Why do so many of us feel so alone and isolated and disconnected? The subject of depression came up yesterday. Is depression, sadness, fear, and anger, despair, are these just symptoms of a deeper state of illness, of dis-ease? Is it not pointing to our need to come closer? Since intimacy surrounds us, it is fully intimate. Being surrounded from, being fully intimate, when we are estranged from that, that's a kind of illness. To be estranged from something we cannot be separated from is a kind of primordial illness. So the Buddha was spoken of as a physician. When we are feeling such things, alone, isolated, when we're fearful that our of our world and living creatures and ourselves and other people. All of what we do, in a sense, is asking us to stop and turn towards the mind of ancient Buddhas, which is your mind. So how do we hear the teachings of the Ascension? Well, as been made clear in these teachings, we don't have to go anywhere. But we could go into the woods, sit amidst the trees. We could go sit by the river and sit without a book, without music, without a phone, without conversation. Because in that, we can't communicate. The communication is happening, but we can't hear it. We can study the buds on the branches that are beginning to open and watch them begin to unfurl and see how, just like a newborn, the buds on the trees, have you noticed? They are both an infant and they are ancient. They have a quality about them that is ancient. And many of them, their ancestry goes all the way back. We can experience the changing light as our earth moves on its endless, miraculous journey around the sun. We can feel the air that is shifting from winter to spring. We can notice the changing color of the river. And in all of this, to sit, to be present, and don't try and have an experience. You know, when I was younger, I spent a lot of time in the mountains and I felt drawn, I kept going. But I was reading a lot and I felt, Dada Roshi used to talk about the muse, that he, particularly when he was photographing, sometimes when he went out to Point Lobos, he went out there and spent some time out there and was photographing. And he came back and talked about how he was getting so, the energy was getting so incredibly strong that at one point he had to go away from it. He was going to faint. And he just had to sit down and let it move through and calm himself. And he talked about how there were times where it was like the muse was speaking to him, was communicating. But I didn't know anything about that. But I had a sense, I was feeling something, there was affinity, I felt drawn. And so I would go into the woods and I would try and have a special experience, right? And it never happened. Until I stopped trying and forgot about that. And then the doors opened. Hojin Sensei also quoted from the Avatamsaka Sutra in the art practice, "The mind is like an artist able to paint the worlds. Five clusters are all born there. There's nothing it doesn't make. Mind, that is. As is the mind, so is the Buddha. As is the Buddha, so are living beings." And we might add, "So as are living beings, so are sentient beings. Know that the Buddha and mind are in essence inexhaustible. Impermanent, but Buddha and mind and self-nature are inexhaustible. If people know the actions of mind create all the worlds, they will see the Buddha and understand the Buddha's true nature." To study the Dharma, to study with a teacher, to study the self, is to study the world. We talked yesterday about that mental factor in which is there is no inquiring awareness, and about the importance in our meditation that we're not just calming the mind and trying to get quiet. That is important, again, because in that way we come closer. Now we can hear with the eyes and see with the ears. Now it is more and more all throughout the body. We are not preoccupied. There is spaciousness, and it is boundless. But the quietness, the calming, the samadhi, which the Buddha said is one of the three essential aspects of training, alone is not enough. Why? One, because it's impermanent. Those states come and go. You know, when we sit, when we have a powerful weekend, which I hope this weekend was helpful for those of you who are here, when we do sesshin and we really experience our mind in a different way, and then you're leaving, it's like you're leaving that mind behind, oh no, right? And you're going back and it's like, right? And this old mind comes back, right? And we want to preserve it, and we can't. Of course you can. It's not a thing, it's not permanent, it's in constant flux, but the more we practice, the more stable that becomes. And so it's impermanent, but also because just in that calm, there is no inquiring awareness. There is no insightful awareness. There's just quiet. And so we have to be careful about that, because oftentimes when that arises in a person sitting, they subtly turn away from their practice and turn towards the quiet and just sit in that because it's peaceful. And it is. But your practice is becoming inert. Right? That doesn't actually ultimately help you. And so that's where this element of the awareness of our mind, basic capacity, to within that quiet, to be penetrating, to be bright and alert, to have either a very explicit or a more subtle aspect of inquiry. And I talked about yesterday that in this practice, if we're just here to calm down, that's okay, right? That's a good thing. We need a lot. We could use a whole hell of a lot more of that, right? Will everybody please calm down, right? But there's more, right? Because you can't hold on to that. It gets disrupted. And that's why that inquiring, that's why this is an examining, searching, seeking tradition, wanting to understand, wanting to know, wanting to get into and understand the nature of this mind, so that when we experience the disruptions, right, as the Buddha said in the Dhammapada, that we can be at peace, right, and free of hatred in the midst of hateful people, that we can be at peace and without greed in the midst of greediness. We can be at peace and clear in the midst of confusion. But that doesn't happen just because we want it to. And that's why this is a practice tradition. That's why we spend this morning, when we gather together, doing exactly that. This is a period of practice in which we practice these traditional forms of practice. And then we go down and have lunch, and it's still happening. So how do you have that? How do you really have your meal at the same time that there's a conversation going on? It's harder, right? We get caught. We lose our mindfulness because things are moving more quickly now. From this to this to this to this. And we get lost in that. But we're training to not get lost. Our capacity for mindfulness has that capacity. But we have to develop it. That's why that element of constancy, of continuity is so important. I think I, rather than ending with a poem, I just want to say, I was thinking this morning how, I mean, I do hope that this weekend was helpful in some way for those of you who are here and those of you who joined us from home. And I was thinking about how wonderful it is to practice with people who care about the Dharma. You know, I was reflecting on in the early years, you know, people who came here were interested in the Dharma, but it was in such a different place. You know, it was harder to get to and harder to understand. It was more of an outlier thing in the early 80s. And so people came here with all kinds of ideas. You know, all kinds of, I mean, we all have ideas, but people came with all kinds of ideas that had very often had very little to do with the Dharma, but a lot of expectations about what it was and should be. And I remember somebody came for an introductory retreat and I was taking them around. I mean, they hadn't even unpacked their bags. And I was talking about the schedule and they said, I'm leaving. And I said, why? He says, this place is not teaching Dharma. This has nothing to do with the Dharma. I said, how do you know? He said, because I know what the Dharma is. I said, okay. There was a lot of sincerity, but there was also a lot of, I mean, we were all, everybody was new, right? It wasn't developed. There was no stability. The stability was really Dada Roshi. He was providing us with the stability and some others who helped. And I was just thinking about that process of change and evolution and, you know, not just within ourselves and within the Sangha, but in the country, more people know about this, more people are interested. And that level of sincerity, that even if when people come here and they ultimately realize, you know, maybe this isn't my path, that while they're here, for the most part, my experience is that there's a sincerity, that people are genuinely searching for something, recognizing there needs to be a path in my life. And that is a wonderful thing to be in the midst of. It changes everything. It's like that intimacy. In that, when we function together, and I know that doesn't mean everybody right now in this hall connects entirely with every aspect of training or, you know, has faith in all of this or agrees with anything I say or everything I say. I know that that's not true, right? That's how we each find our way. But generally speaking, my sense, my experience, what I feel is that there is a level of earnestness that is like a door opening wide. And it allows us, even with all those other, you know, doubts or insecurities or resistances or, you know, still not sure, that makes what we do more possible. Makes it, in a way, come closer, makes it more powerful, potentially, for each of us. And I thank you for that. And that is a medicine. And that's not just for us. If insentient things, insentient objects and beings are communicating the Dharma, then we sure the hell are. Right? And I don't mean standing on a corner, please don't, and expounding the Dharma. You know, the best way to let the Dharma speak through you is practice it. To the best of your ability, just live it, simply, sincerely. That speaks volumes. And when we speak in that language, people trust it. You know, when we encounter somebody and we think, they're not trying to do something for me, they're just being. I think there's a way in which we trust that because it's authentic. And so, thank you for your authenticity. And may we cultivate that, expound that ceaselessly.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.